مولاي صل وسلم دائما أبدا على حبيبك خير الخلق كلهم.
Welcome to Beyond Stigma. This podcast is dedicated to breaking down barriers and fostering open conversations about mental health within our community. I'm your host, Rana El-Maghrabi, a child and adolescent psychiatrist passionate about promoting mental well-being and supporting individuals of all ages. In each episode, we will delve into the critical issues surrounding mental health, share personal stories, and provide practical tips to help you navigate the challenges you may face. Our mission is clear: to spread awareness, break the stigma, and ensure that every member of our community feels seen, heard, and supported. إن الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا. من يهديه الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له. وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله. Today, I'm thrilled to introduce our special guest, Dr. Suzy Ismail. As the founding director of Cornerstone, Dr. Suzy has been a pioneer in promoting mental health awareness and education. She recently delivered an inspiring lecture in our hometown here on building a thriving Muslim community, and today she joins us to share her insights and wisdoms on how we can collectively support each other in our mental health journeys. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Ismail. We're very excited to see you again.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you, Dr. Rana, for inviting me to be on this first episode of this very critical podcast that I think is going to bring a lot of awareness and importance and understanding to the aspect of mental health, particularly among communities that tend to stigmatize mental health care and the seeking of mental health care.
So our very first question, Dr. Ismail, in our lecture, you've spoken about cultural stigma surrounding mental health issues in the Muslim community. Can you share a personal experience or a story that highlights the importance of addressing the stigma and how we can work to create a more supportive environment for those struggling with mental health challenges?
So I think that's a great question to kind of kick off the conversation. You know, we often talk about the stigma, but we don't often realize the extent and the impact that the stigmatization of mental health care can have, you know, and the very real, very sad and tragic results that we can see sometimes in terms of situations where mental health care was needed and sadly denied. There are many, many, you know, real life situations that come to mind of families in which, particularly, you know, with youth who were struggling, you know, where clearly there were indicators where the young person had severe mental health issues, whether it was depression, anxiety, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, manic episodes that were very evident. But many families, unfortunately, many parents, unfortunately, fear this idea of taking a child to see a mental health care professional. And so in many of these cases, we will see families or parents who will take their child to the sheikh, who will say, you know, well, this is a situation in which a ruqya can easily help, you know, this is hasad or the evil eye, and coming up with all sorts of alternatives. Of course, we don't deny that there is a spiritual component to mental, emotional, relational, and social wellness. And we want to be able to take a holistic approach in which we look at all of those aspects together. But I've also seen, unfortunately, the tragic outcome, youth who, you know, take their own lives, you know, individuals who live a life that is, you know, completely tragic and unfulfilled, succumbing to homelessness, to criminal activity, to things that could have been avoided because this is someone who suffered from, you know, manic depression. This is someone who suffered from schizophrenia, from paranoia, things that really could be helped, you know, and in many ways, you know, the relief found through professional mental health care. But because of the stigma associated, unfortunately, that help is not sought.
Thank you, Dr. Ismail. And I really like how you emphasize the holistic approach. You know, we're not saying the spiritual component is to be ignored, it's essential, but what else can we do in addition to that? And that leads me to my second question, especially about how do we talk about this? And in your lecture, you emphasize the need for open conversations around mental health to reduce stigma and isolation. How can we, as individuals and as a community, encourage more open and honest discussions about mental health? And what are some potential benefits of doing so?
Okay, so another good follow-up question. And I think, you know, conversations such as the one that we're having, these are conversations that need to be had, not just on a podcast, whereas, you know, it's an important start, but they're conversations that need to be had around kitchen tables, you know, in dining rooms and living rooms. They need to be had in our masajid. You know, Jum'ah khutbas should focus and center quite frequently on the topic of mental health, you know, recognizing and realizing that there can't be this separation between, again, the other elements of life. You know, there can't be spirituality and religion, and that's completely separate, or, you know, can't coexist with mental health care. Instead, the more we talk about these topics, the more we normalize the understanding that, just like we will talk about GI symptoms, you know, I have, you know, I go to gatherings sometimes in the community, and aunties will have no problem discussing, you know, their frequent bowel movements. But, you know, when it comes to an issue of someone that's struggling with depression, it becomes taboo. And when someone is comfortable speaking about a physical ailment, it's usually because they're seeking remedy, and there's no shame attached to that seeking remedy, seeking help. We need to make conversations about depression, about anxiety, about many of the mental health outcomes that we've talked about. We need to normalize them, make it something that people are not ashamed of, you know, allow people to recognize that most likely each and every one of us will experience some form of a depressive episode, an anxious episode, some form of mental health outcome in our lifetime. And it's okay to talk about it. It's okay to carry these conversations through that process of normalization.
I love the word that you said, normalize, because we tend to sometimes speak when there's a crisis that happened or a big problem, but the idea of normalizing, making this part of our day-to-day conversation. So I really appreciate, you know, you emphasizing this point. You've also talked about the importance of teaching young people how to process their emotions healthy and promote emotional intelligence. What are some strategies or resources that families can use to have more open and supportive conversations with their kids or youth about emotions? And how can we empower youth to prioritize their mental well-being?
So I think when it comes to young people in particular, you know, keeping in mind that for our children, parents are often the first role models, the ones that they look to understand and contextualize the world around them. So the child who has never seen a parent cry, you know, the child who only hears from the parents, like, you know, crying is for babies, or what do you have to be sad about? You know, you have a roof over your head, you have food on the table. That's a dismissal of emotions, and it can cause a child to internalize and feel almost ashamed of the emotions that they're carrying or they're expressing, the very real human emotions, rather than, you know, receiving that validation and that affirmation and that understanding that these emotions are natural. It's what we should be feeling as human beings. And there doesn't necessarily have to be a justification every time or an explanation. Sometimes we just feel sad, and it's okay to feel that way and to be able to talk about it. So I think with children and teaching our youth, you know, in terms of increasing emotional intelligence and, you know, teaching more empathy, more compassion, more awareness surrounding mental, emotional, relational, and social wellness, it starts at home. It starts with what we model as adults, but it also extends beyond that, you know, having our youth be engaged in activities that, you know, improve mental wellness, you know, removing the obsession with devices, not turning to TikTok or Google to diagnose, you know, what a child feels is depression, but instead guiding our youth towards actual avenues of, you know, healthy support groups, you know, practitioners such as yourself, you know, providers, organizations that are actually experts in this field, and realizing that a lot of times our youth may try to self-diagnose, our youth may try to, and you know, one of the good things, alhamdulillah, you know, I do see that our youth are becoming more comfortable with mental health topics, but there can also be sometimes, you know, too much of an extreme where everyone decides they have depression, you know, and everyone decides they need to share their, you know, their anti-anxiety meds, and that can also give us the opposite problem. So finding the balance, giving our youth the resources, encouraging conversations, but also being honest. You know, one of the things that unfortunately I see quite frequently in our masajid is, you know, we've had a lot of youth, unfortunately, pass away recently. And when the janazas are announced, what we'll hear are things like, well, you know, he died in his sleep, or, you know, she had a brain aneurysm, or, you know, we don't know what happened. Her heart just stopped. And what we're not hearing is that the person died in their sleep because they overdosed on pills and they took their own life. Or, you know, this person did have a brain aneurysm, but it was because they tried to hang themselves. And it's such a taboo. And I know in some communities, alhamdulillah, that's starting to change. And we're starting to see families come out and speak about suicide and speak about depression and speak about mental health and, you know, the very real tragic outcomes that can occur if it's ignored. And I think the more we do that, the more our youth will feel comfortable and will have the resources that they need when they're struggling with their mental health.
Thank you, Dr. Ismail. And I love how you emphasize it starts in our homes. It starts with parents as role models, which leads me to my next question. What about, you've emphasized specifically that reaching out for help is actually a sign of strength, not weakness. Can you share some advice or encouragement for individuals who may be struggling with mental health challenges, but are hesitant to seek help due to fear of judgment or stigma?
Yeah, you know, I love that, the accessibility component. Maybe 10, 15 years ago, what was considered accessible was like dialing the number of a hotline, you know. But what I see with a lot of youth today, nobody actually talks on the phone anymore, but they text, you know. So finding the crisis text line, for example, 741-741. If you dial that text number, if you type the word Salam, S-A-L-A-M, the text line will try to connect you with a Muslim counselor from one of the organizations that participates with the crisis text line. That's a mechanism that's more accessible to our youth today. Using apps. I mean, a lot of our young people love apps. And, you know, I hear from a lot of youth these days actually that, you know, well, ChatGPT is my therapist, which is, you know, possibly a way or a look into the future. I wouldn't necessarily advocate for it right now. I've tested it out and ChatGPT doesn't always give the best therapeutic advice, but I do see this as potentially being another avenue. And so I think accessibility for our youth, utilizing technology and ways in which they feel comfortable communicating, it may not be, you know, what their parents felt comfortable with, going to a psychologist or a psychiatrist's office, sitting on a couch, that kind of traditional model we've seen. And this is why, you know, for example, in the work we do at Cornerstone, we provide alternative therapeutic interventions, which looks different than maybe what traditional counseling may look like. We provide televisits, phone sessions, we provide texting sessions, we provide group sessions, we provide, you know, family sessions. So different dynamics to reach, you know, those who are struggling in the way that feels most comfortable to them, because it's not a one-size-fits-all type of approach that works.
Thank you so much, Dr. Ismail. And my last question is, you've highlighted the importance of community involvement and support in creating a stronger, more resilient environment for mental wellness. What are some ways that community members can get involved in promoting mental health initiatives? And how can we work together to build a more supportive and compassionate community for those struggling with mental health challenges?
Okay, so another good question to kind of wrap us up with. I do think it's really incumbent on each and every one of us as community members, as, you know, members of society at large, to educate ourselves, to know what resources are out there. Not every single one of us is going to be a therapist. Not every single one of us should try to be a therapist, because unfortunately, sometimes when we take on that role, we may actually harm rather than help. You know, you would never expect someone who wasn't a surgeon to operate on you. We should treat mental health in a similar way. Your best friend may be a support, but they may not be equipped to be able to provide, you know, therapeutic interventions. So as community members, I do think, just like we encourage people to take CPR classes if they work in schools or, you know, are around children or around those who might be vulnerable or susceptible to issues in terms that would need CPR help, I think every community member should take a mental health first aid course, should take a QPR, suicide prevention course, should take something. And these courses are so, you know, present and available online. Many of them are offered for free. It's a couple of hours on a Saturday morning. You don't know whose life you may be able to save, or the means by which, you know, Allah places you in a pathway to help someone else, because you are equipped with at least the basics of, you know, how do I direct someone? What are the red flags? What should cause concern? You know, who may be someone who is more susceptible or more likely to harm oneself, or when is it serious? curious. And these are all things that we can learn from these courses. So I would want every community member to take one of these types of courses online, even maybe Masajid, hold these as, you know, programs for the Sunday school teachers and the Islamic school teachers and, you know, the youth leaders and the imams. That would be the first step. And then again, you know, talking about it, normalizing the conversation, discussing constantly, you know, bringing this topic up, you know, in the same way you would naturally bring up other topics of importance. And I think that's the way that together we can hopefully bring more awareness to mental health and the resources that are out there.
I want to extend a heartfelt thank you to Dr. Suzy Ismail for sharing her invaluable insights on mental health and the importance of addressing stigma. We explored how stigma can impact individuals' willingness to seek help and how we can foster a more supportive and compassionate community. To our audience, whether you're seeking guidance, looking for support, or simply want to learn more about mental health, you've come to the right place. Let's embark on this journey together, beyond stigma and towards a brighter and healthier future for our community. If you found today's discussion enlightening, please consider leaving a review and sharing this episode with your friends and family. Your support helps us reach more listeners and continue those important conversations. Join us again next time as we delve into another critical topic that affects our community. Until then, remember, together we can break the silence and change the narrative. Thank you for listening. Assalamu alaikum. صلوات الله عليه الله الله